sign in the sheet and state your name for the record, please.
We have to sign in now. That's helpful.
Never spelled right.
And before you start, I would like to point out that at the beginning of the hearing, a gentleman came forward and handed me his written statement. I do want to pass this down to Mr. Lang to make sure that it does become part of the record.
I've signed in, so my name is Mary Cox. I'm a coordinator for the Eagle Point Coalition, which is in opposition to the Arbors of Cottage Dale. I'm a retired attorney. I live in Eagle Point. And the first thing I would like to present for the record is a list of 11 requests for clarification to the minutes for the Planning and Zoning Commission hearing held on August 27th. There were a number of inconsistencies and contradictions that I've provided some clarifications for.
Mr. Lang, he's got his hand up.
The minutes are just a summary. They're not direct comments.
The report, yeah, report, right.
Well, I hope that can add some more clarity to the summary. I would also like to present for the record testimony provided by Wolfgang von Baumgart.
Baumgarten. That was received at the meeting last time also. Is this new?
This is new testimony prepared by Mr. von Baumgart. And one of my neighbors at Eagle Point, Craig Lack, who is a doctorate and professional engineer certified to practice in Delaware, with 30 years of working experience in chemical engineering, did a lot of work, volunteer work, preparing these charts I want to share with you this evening. Unfortunately, he's had a medical emergency, so I'm going to attempt to present his talking points to you. We have the visuals to some large ones so the audience can see what I'm speaking to, and I have some smaller ones I hope will be satisfactory with all of you. This chart, can I?
Could you stay
well,
near
you
the
better stay. You
got to
stay near the microphone, unless we have one you can carry.
Would it be helpful if I move that easel over here for you? Because you're certainly welcome.
Yeah, take that big stuff off and put the little thing.
If I could just use the
sure.
Stuff.
Okay. If you step, I'll move it here. You go over there because you have to be on.
This is one attorney helping another attorney. Isn't that nice? This is why we can all get along.
I believe this is called professional courtesy.
I like
sir.
Her. I'm impressed. I am impressed.
Yes.
Are these the same comments that Mr. Lack provided at the commission level, and he provided each commissioner with a copy?
No, sir, it is not. He's been working.
That's fine.
Thank you very much.
Just for the council's benefit, there is a copy of Mr. Lack's comments and the comments I provided you in the packet.
Okay. Yes, this first chart, can you all see that? Okay, this first chart, the arbors of Cottage Dale may threaten the city of Lewis's protected wellhead. Here there is a graphic depiction of the city of Lewis's wellhead and the Tidewater wellhead. Jackson Pit is located about half a mile from the wellhead supplying the city of Lewis's wells. And this is taken from an official Sussex County from the mapping system that's on the internet. Jackson Pit is also located within 50 yards of the Tidewater wellhead. Jackson Pit is also adjacent to many residential wells that are used in adjoining neighboring communities off Plantations Road. The red square is where Jackson Pit is. It's actually 50 yards, so there was a little bloop when we printed it out kind of big. this graphic shows that there are potential risks to water supplies that the public really hasn't been made aware of. And there are natural and man-made variables that have been affecting the environment in this area for the past 3 to 4 decades. And we know that DNREC recommends as a common remediation practice the notion of capping. And when you cover over a toxic wake, and I understand that that's not going to be done, but if you, I'll go quickly. if you keep the rainwater out, everything will stay at the status quo, and the pollutants or contaminants underground won't be migrating into the water. This works in stable soil, where you have dirt and mud and rock, and you have minimal lateral water flow. Things work the exact opposite in coastal communities because of our sandy soil. You can cap all you want, and the pollutants here are still going to migrate. We know rainwater generally drains through our soil in a matter of hours. Dr. Lack recommends that the only solution here is to dig out all of the hazardous contaminants and pollutants, dig down to the bottom of Jackson Pit, which is about 25 feet deep, haul the soil away, and that will spell safety for the future residents there and the adjoining neighborhoods. The next chart. This chart was produced based on a study that DNREC funded in 2003. And what they did was they paid for research to create a mathematical model to show a three-dimensional depiction of soil composition and gradients and how to define geographically what types of man-made activities should not be taken that would affect the drinking water and provide any risks to the drinking water quality. And the study was called the Wellhead Protection Area Delineation Study for Lewis and Rehoboth Area. And the model predicted well pumpage from the Lewis Municipal Wells would pull the water level down. And the model is actually real. And here Dr. Lack has superimposed the actual workings of this model on top of the map. And the first line, this blue line here, shows that the water level, because of the pumping from the well in 2003 from the municipal wells, the water level is going down a half a meter. The yellow line, the water line is going down, the water level, rather, is going down 1 meter. At the green line, and this is the red, is where the municipal wells actually are located underneath his little green chart. At the green line, the water level is being lowered by 1.5 meters. This purple line shows the predicted water drawdown area for the city of Lewis Wells. It is, in 2003, lowering the water level by 0.5 meter or 1.5 feet. The Tidewater wellhead is not part of this picture because it wasn't part of the study. DNREC found the direction of groundwater flow beneath Jackson Pit is northeast. And it's due to the pumpage from the City of Lewis Municipal Well Field, approximately a half mile away. So he's trying to give some more depth to the picture that we started off with. In the third chart, you see shallow, unconfined aquifers under Jackson Pit put our water supply at risk. And this is a chart that shows the aquifers, a study of the aquifers from Lewis out to Georgetown. And he's marked where Jackson Pit is located, and you can see how very shallow the unconfined aquifer is there. Shallow aquifers are much more sensitive to what's done at the ground level at depths to 50 feet and over. They're highly sensitive to what is done to the ground. The more shallow the aquifer, the more affected it is by surface effects such as capping over pollutants with impervious cover. And this was also a study funded by DENREC. Okay, this is the hardest chart because I can't pronounce the chemicals. Toxic chemicals present beneath Jackson Pit. Over the past decades, DENREC studies with shallow monitoring well data collections shown these very toxic chemicals were present in Jackson Pit. Benzopyrene, dichloroethene, toluene, thorium, thallium, chromium-6, chromium-3, or chromate. Because many toxic chemicals may have migrated further into the soil and lower aquifers, deep water and soil sampling is required to accurately know the extent of the toxic pollutants. At the last hearing, Dr. Lack talked a lot about chain of custody and some other problems with DENREC's data that, well, I didn't really understand, but I think this is fairly clear. A lot of these volatile organic chemicals, VOCs, are fairly heavy. So when it rains, they go further down in the soil. So over the years, construction material, as it deteriorates when it's been buried in the soil, toxic chemicals form. I'm sure you all know drywall is one of those that you can find toxic chemicals if they're buried in a landfill over a period of time. The reason he is recommending the deep water and soil sampling is because we don't know what is down 25 feet or so in that pit and how these chemicals have moved. DENREC detected many hazardous chemicals in Jackson Pit over the past 20 to 30 years. They say there's no need for further soil sampling. We would like to be assured that they aren't there because Dr. Lack asks, where did they all go? The next chart gives you the third dimension to what is happening in the land under Jackson Pit. And this is an official Sussex County soils map taken from the DENREC 1970 Field Office Technical Guide. And in this chart of soils, all the soils are sandy loam except one, and I'll get to that in a little bit. Sandy, loamy soil. Things shoot through it. Sloped sandy loam soil directs contaminated groundwater from beneath Jackson Pit to the wellheads. Water migrates rapidly through sandy loam. Steeper pitch, faster runoff, faster migration. Jackson Pit, in this 1970 chart, map rather, is labeled BO for a borrow pit. And so that was the kind of soil they called it in those days. But really, if you look at all the sandy loam soil from Israel Church northeast to the Lewis Municipal Wells, the water is steadily migrating northeast. This dark gray area is underground water, and there actually is an underground stream. And this little box here is where the Lewis Municipal Wells are. Soil composition and slope direct water from Jackson Pit towards wellheads, even if capped. This stream, all the sandy loam soil goes from Israel Church across Jackson Pit, across Eagle Point to Route 1, and then There's a different kind of soil here, and this is the one exception. It's called Joe. Johnston loam is very, very poorly drained hydric soil. And the way it functions is like, it's mud and silt, and it forms a trough like a cement drainage ditch. So once contaminants, pollutants, whatever is traveling through the soil hits this trough, once it gets past it and hits the dark, shady, the shaded area, which is an underwater stream, a deep underwater stream, it's going to rapidly go into the municipal wells. So there is a serious need for us to clean up Jackson Pit, possibly containerize it, to do serious remediation here, because the soil is not like soil in northern Delaware. It's very sandy. Things are very movable here. Final chart. In the spring of 2009, we noticed a trend starting with the federal EPA, and an article published was transfer the risk, make the deal. And basically at the federal level was great promotion of cutting deals with the risk of exposing citizens to hazardous chemicals. What we need here in Sussex County, and we're looking to you all to provide us with it, is that the DENREC professional engineers and the scientists conduct more rigorous testing, that they look at the function of depth and the position of the pollutants throughout the entire Jackson Pit property, not the peripheral grid of test pits that have been done to date. Water will naturally migrate through sandy soil to the underground stream. The only real remediation is excavation. If Denrick's conclusions are erroneous and Dr. Lack is correct, then thousands of innocent citizens' healths are at risk, especially with the drinking water. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else who would like to speak in opposition? Yes, ma'am.
Thank you.
Would you sign in and then print your name and then give us your name for the record and address, please?
Certainly.
Makes it easier for me to.
My name is Elizabeth Collard. I work in Lewis area, and I live in Eagle Point. And I have a number of graphics to show you, as well as a statement that I would like to make regarding the petition. 2.5 years ago, when we first moved here, we were told that we could look forward to a community that was very similar to ours, being built immediately behind ours, which was going to consist of 80 units, upscale townhouse units, selling for approximately $350,000. The plan that you see in front of you is that document that was on the internet advertising this facility. Obviously, that has changed dramatically, although the size of the plot has not changed at all. We're now talking about putting 270% increase in the density behind not only Eagle Point, but three other surrounding communities. We have a problem with that, obviously, for a number of reasons. About, I guess it was spring of 2008, we started to see activity back there. The area was being cleared. We thought that the buildings were starting to go up finally, only to have them very quickly stop that process and pull everything out. And the rumors that then ensued were there is something wrong, it's a dump site, they'll never be building on that because of what they found in the ground. very distressing to all of the people who are at Eagle Point, obviously, because of what that might mean for the land that we're on. The change that has come about at this point to now look at putting 216 units in the place of the 80 units is just astounding to us. Can I have the other document? You've seen this before, but it needs to be explained a little bit. I'm sorry, I'm walking away. One of the things that this document shows you is that Eagle Point is only half finished. Unfortunately, this is not accurate. We now have, out of the 121 units, 103 are occupied. We have 28 out of the 30 built, and they surround on two sides the proposed 216 rental units. All the way across, when you look directly across from Eagle Point, you're seeing the Rolling Meadows facility and homes. As I said, we are very, very concerned, but we also wonder why it's necessary to put 216 units in that place. If the developer is interested in providing you with rental units, so be it. 32, that's marvelous. Nobody's complaining about that. We're complaining about the density of 216. We're looking at the traffic patterns and the message that you heard earlier, the peak rush hour in the report that was the preliminary land use service application, it says peak average daily trips, 1,728. Big difference. For those of you who have read the proceedings of the Planning and Zoning Committee that we presented to a couple of weeks ago, Representative Schwarzkopf got up and was emphatic that there was no money coming from the state for DLDOT revisions, regardless of whether the developer puts up a portion. There won't be any money there to fix any existing problems that are related to a 216-unit facility. Can I have the next one? There is a vast difference in this configuration, which is the proposed new development, in terms of the overall look, and again, what we see from our vantage point, which, by the way, is very, very close. We're now looking at sort of a barracks kind of arrangement rather than open areas and walkways and the pond, all of those things that were supposedly going to be part of the original design. It has become far, far less attractive, and as earlier stated, the concern about hard impervious cover is certainly one that we have to be considering as well. If you look at this, what you're seeing is the scope of the actual property. What you see right in the center is a little orange area. That's the property fence that was put up when the land was started to be cleared in the spring of, I guess it's 2008. That orange and what you see behind it are the buildings that belong to Rolling Meadows. It is a very small site. What we are looking at now is our townhouses being overshadowed by 52-foot buildings that are packed into that area. And as property owners, we should have some consideration from this board as well. We have a concern, obviously. This gives you a little clearer idea of our vantage point.
Oh, just hold it up, sir, a little, because it's down so low.
I'm sorry.
No, that's it. If you could just stand there and just hold it up a little bit, that'd be better. Yeah, perfect.
Now, what you have is our vantage point from our back stairs to that line. And you can see, again, that orange peeking through very, very short distance to be overshadowed by those buildings. Thank you. And that is not just one person's vantage point. That is all along the property line. This is another indication. You can see where the water tower is that we're concerned about in terms of the ground and all of the junk that's in it. Next one. You were wondering about the burial ground before and the distance of it. This is the beginning. We're at the street level here, the sidewalk. We go back, and I believe there's a 40-foot requirement in terms of the burial ground. We have a large area that's cordoned off by a fence. It is absolutely backed up onto the Jackson Pit dump site. And there will be other people who will be speaking about that a little bit later on. One of the things that occurred when we had, as a result of the property being leveled in the Jackson Pit, and then the eventual stopping of that activity, is, and this is behind our property, we had a lake that developed any time it rained, a lake that was able to support ducks and heron. Excuse me. And I think that that's an indication of certainly what kind of things can happen if you disturb the property to any great degree, but also the fact that it was not remediated by anybody on the other side of that property. We finally managed to convince our own developer and builder that we needed some assistance. We have reason for concern. I think that's the last one. The petitioner, Mr. Banning, has found a way to recoup roughly $4 million spent on a Rubino property that no longer has a significant value. The solution? Get the state and Sussex County to bail them out. The Jackson Pit parcel was intended to be used for an 80-unit upscale condominium community. The initial clearing of the land, as I said, had begun. Apparently, the original intent of producing 80 upscale units no longer was a viable sales opportunity. Obviously, who in their right mind would want to buy property on a polluted dump site, let alone live there? Mr. Banning seeks to convince you to approve his petition to almost triple the number of units on the same small parcel and to change them to rental units as well. He also seeks financial assistance from the state to clean up the Rubino dump site and make changes to the traffic patterns and roadways, again using state funds. He hasn't addressed how children living in these 216 rental units might be incorporated into an already overtaxed school system, or how, according to his own documents, Plantation Road and its inhabitants can manage another 1,728 vehicles, exits and entries from Mackenzie Way, without requiring more state funding. Being the first to seek the use of the preliminary land use service, this project is being fast-tracked through the approval process. How this is happening without even the necessary required zoning changes being approved is a mystery. The fact that only 32 out of the proposed 216 units are designated for Sussex County Rental Program seems disproportionate to the government funds Mr. Banning would utilize to develop the Rubino property. As Eagle Point residents, we are immediately We are in immediate proximity to this dump site. Approving this petition without further thorough investigation of the toxins and pollutants and carcinogens buried beneath the ground that threaten our health and our water sources is unconscionable. It has the potential for negatively impacting the health of future residents, both rental as well as owners. A vote in favor of the developer certainly helps him recoup the money, but puts the citizens you represent in jeopardy. Mr. Cole, your stated aim as a council member is to protect the coastal resort areas and make them a great place to live and raise a family. Ms. Stever, you represent all of us in the affected area. Mr. Wilson, you state you want a positive place for our children to live and raise their families. Mr. Phillips, you state you want Sussex County to be a place for the American dream to thrive. And Mr. Vincent, you want the county, to remain a great place to raise our families. We ask that each of you recognize that you are in positions not to help the developer recoup his financial losses. We believe that your overriding responsibility is to serve the citizens of Sussex County. Affordable housing is important, but not when it is hazardous to the renter's health and well-being. We urge each of you to vote a resounding no to this petition. Thank you.
I have a question. Mr. Collard?
Yes.
When did you find out about the Jackson Pit and that there was something underground or some problem there?
When they started to clear it and stopped. We had no idea.
After you bought your home, you didn't know?
No idea.
Because I was going to ask you why you would buy a home there.
Exactly. We had no idea.
Okay. All right.
We bought our home when we were in Germany. And we were told by our builder, look at the site on the internet and see how marvelous it is.
Okay.
But wouldn't there not be an advantage to have this pit cleaned up?
I'm sorry?
Wouldn't there be an advantage for you to not have this pit cleaned up? And so it's an advantage.
We're not.
So why is it that you don't want it cleaned up?
Sir, I'm not saying we don't want it cleaned up. I'm saying we don't need the density in that particular area. When it doesn't match any other...
I just asked you about the pit. That's all I was interested in.
And I answered you.
Okay.
Anybody else? Thank you.
I think we're afraid.
Thank you. Is there anyone else that would like to speak in opposition to this project?
Sam, be seen and not heard. Now just sit there.
Yeah. Anyone else, sir?
Sit there. Don't tell him it's okay to speak. I didn't know.
I want you...
I think you're...
Would you sign the in and print your name as well, and then state your name and address for the record, please?
Okay, my name is Paul Brager. I live on Inlet Way in Hennepin Landing Division of Lewis, Delaware. I am here representing over 200 homeowners who live in that subdivision. There is an awful lot that has come forward in the testimony tonight, and we, as a group, collectively feel that A, there is a burden on the roads already, which, at least by testimony tonight, there's still disagreement on how many cars per day actually use that roadway, that particular part of Plantation Road. There is still disagreement on, truthfully, how the road is actually supposed to be safeguarded. DelDOT recently put in a turn lane, but didn't mark it as such. And so people keep turning into each other just to get off of Shady Lane onto Plantation Road. What would happen when you put another 1,000 cars a day another couple of hundred feet away? We collectively feel that this burden is unwarranted. It hasn't been thought through and needs further study. It's our understanding, clearly, from the testimony tonight, that building a development of 216 units that arguably would support well over 400 individuals in an apartment complex that would house children as well as adults in an area that would produce, or certainly could produce, toxic emissions through methane vents, as well as other chemicals that have already been identified here tonight, represents at the very least a health risk that is just not warranted. Letting the developer engage in a state-supported abatement program is not clearly in anyone's best interest, certainly not the public's best interest, if in fact a third party abatement provider would identify potential health risks in a more complete fashion, simply because he's not disincentivized as a developer and builder might be. We certainly see that a complex of this size would require a rather large paved area. Again, there seems to be some doubt in the testimony tonight as to exactly how much paving there would be. Clearly, the more paving there is, the more water runoff we would have in this area, which is directly across from Hennepin Landing. We're already having water runoff problems. This would simply add to it. We also feel that this is an extraordinarily small area to put 216 homeowner units. Surely there must be larger parcels available. We're not saying that this is a bad idea to have 216 new homes for permanent residents of the Lewis area, nor are we saying that it's a bad thing to have lower priced units for people who need to be able to have lower rents, who provide services for our citizens. We just think this is the wrong place to do it. Finally, I want to say that we know that you as our elected officials are here to serve a public need for a specific type of housing. And again, we applaud that. However, when the potential risk of toxic emissions and other possible contaminants far outweighs the upside value, since there are clearly other parcels where this could be built, we would like to think that you would not like to have even the remotest possibility of a major health risk as your legacy for years to come. Hennepin Landing citizens urge you to vote no to this site. Thank you.
Can I ask you a quick question before you leave? Because I should have maybe asked some of the others. There's always that question of NIMBY. I don't want it in my backyard. Did you oppose or do you have any opposition to that original application of 80 units that was originally proposed? Or do you want no development on this site? I mean, where do you think your group would stand on that?
We feel that there has to be responsible development. And since you asked the question, I've just been taking notes tonight. And I would ask you that if I were in your position, shouldn't you be asking how deep is this developer going to dig to get the contaminants out? That was not part of their testimony. I would ask you that if Delaware, in fact, our state, is accepting the liability for what they're doing, why doesn't Delaware just take it and dig it out and provide the remediation? Why give it to someone who is making a dollar off of off of us, but is disincentivized to find the totality of what might be wrong? And that doesn't even address the issue of what happens when graves are found, because in truth, again, I'm going to quote here, we hope to be able to provide all the right respect. Well, I don't know what that means. I'm concerned about what that means. I'm concerned that the traffic impact is still not clear. There's far too many cars already there. What happens when you add another 1,000 to 1,700?
That's a good point.
I believe the TIS does say 1,700.
Yeah.
Yeah, but we heard 1,000 tonight, so.
How many homes are going to be in this thing? 216?
Mm-hmm.
216 units.
Well, that's, what number you're giving us could be anywhere from 6 cars to 8 hours to a family. That doesn't sound unreasonable.
That's the traffic impact study, Sam.
Well, our own common sense tells us that's unreasonable.
Who can DelDOT.
How many people are going to have 6 to 8 cars to a home?
What? Nobody said that. No, Sam.
We're talking. I think the issue is the number of trips
per day that
come out, not the number of cars.
That's probably true, because I know some people ask those 4 or 5 times a day.
Yeah. But you know, again, right now we have, I would say that the only positive impact that I've heard here tonight is that DelDOT would consent to put a traffic light finally at that Shady Lane and Plantation intersection.
Shady Lane, when Plantations?
And Plantation.
All right, thank you very much.
The Cedar Grove Postal Lane project is for 2014.
Yeah.
That's the first thing that's going to be done.
Right.
On Plantations Road. Don't hold your breath.
No, not at all. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Anyone else like to speak? Sir? Yes, please. Thank you.
There's Chief Jackson.
Good evening, Mr. President.
Yes. Petitions. Body.
If you can talk and write at the same time, go ahead.
Okay. My name is Larry Jackson. I am here to represent the Nanticoke Tribe here in Delaware. I reside in Milton, Delaware. I'm employed with Delmar Power, and I'm a family man, married for 15 years, and I have 3 young kids. The question has been asked, and I asked it the same question at the planning and zoning meeting, and that question I never got an answer from the planning and zoning or from Mr. Schrader and his group. And that question is, who is going to be responsible? And that question was also brought up tonight. And as of this time, there is still no answer other than I heard something about that the state of Delaware will take all liability. Is that in writing someplace that the state of Delaware will take all liability? I haven't seen that either. My concern is not only the Native American burial ground. My concern is the welfare of people in general, young people, adults, elderly people, especially elderly people who have a very weak immune system, okay? They can readily get sick just by a common cold, okay? And on top of methane gas and other things like that will contribute to a hazardous health cause. When my wife and I bought our home back in 91, we had gotten a seller's disclosure. And that seller's disclosure told us if there was any termites within the household, was there any molds, was there anything that was hazardous to our health? And if there was anything that was wrong, it had to be fixed before we were able to purchase the house. Now, if anything needs to be in legislation, this should be in legislation. If, and God forbid that it does go through, would there be a seller's disclosure to the tenants? That's a question. Will the tenants know that this has been built on a landfill?
County does not require a disclosure such as that, right, Everett? And I don't think the state does either, so I don't think there would be one required.
Okay. Right, so in other words, if people get sick and not knowing that this was built on a landfill, wouldn't that be a suitcase for the state of Delaware? I mean, I think it would be a legitimate reasoning to sue someone, especially if no one was told. Now, if anybody buys a single dwelling home like myself, there has to be a seller's disclosure present. And I just don't understand why that the tenants would not know. I talked to Mr. John Fiore from the DelDOT, And what I heard tonight, the 2008 study was done. Evidently, John Fury was not there. Because John Fury has told me that this particular transportation, I guess would be the study, has been voided because it's been outdated. Now that came from Mr. Forey himself. Denrek was here. They had two representatives here at the planning and zoning meeting. There was questions that was asked to the Denrek representatives, and they could not answer them. They could not answer them. That puzzles me very, very much. I'm not going to touch bases on the congestion because it'd be redundant. But I have a folder here that has multiple, numerous newspaper headings that is in opposition. I just like to read the headlines. Traffic jams, village center debate. Opponent, developers plan insufficient. Upzoning for waste site makes no sense. Residents question proposed apartments complex. And there's others. Not only are the people behind me that are in opposition, but there's lots of people out here that depending on you as council to oppose this as well. The Nanticoke Borough Ground, and the lady's not here tonight, but her name is Mrs. Cassandra Corsi Marshall. She lives in Baltimore. She was here at the planning and zoning. She was asked if they could impose footage toward the burial ground. And she said absolutely not. Because what they were asking for, and if they had gotten it, it would have been on a headstone of the Native American people buried there. I am not opposing the housing. I am opposing where it's proposed to be built, is what I'm opposing. Mackenzie Way, as has been said earlier, there's one way in and one way out. And from what I understand, there's a sign there on Mackenzie Way as well for daycare to be a hearing for the daycare as well. So that's in addition to the housing. In addition. If you ever, I'm sure everybody knows where Mackenzie Way is and where this proposed project is proposed to be built.
Do you know whether that's tied to Denrek and whether they're going to take responsibility for the children there or not? I mean, is that involved with this?
As far as I know, Mrs. Deaver, Denrek is not taking responsibility of anything.
Okay. I just, you know.
I mean, that's what was said at the planning and zoning meeting. Okay. They won't give an answer. Why are we so apt to put human beings in this situation? You know, money is not everything. We have to consider the welfare of the people. I have three young kids, you know, and I love them dearly, like any parent would love their child. And I would not want to put my child in harm's way. There is a section of land that is backed up by Goslin Creek and Hennepin Landing over near Belltown area. From what I understand, it's state-owned. Why not build it there? You know, where there's no obvious reasons not to build it. We're looking at reasons that anyone, I would think, that would realize that we're just putting people in harm's way if we go and build this on this site. With the landfill there, the burial ground there, the congestion coming out of McKenzie's Way, the congestion coming out of Shady Road. I mean, every year there's more and more tourists coming down, and more of them are finding out about Plantation Road. And that road is congested as it is. So I ask you tonight, Council, to please consider the people's opposition here tonight. And please be led by your heart for the people in Sussex County. And thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Jackson.
Everett, I mean, while he's walking back, our next person coming up, is it possible to, or is it permitted for us to put a requirement of a condition in a conditional use, a condition being that there's a disclosure about, like he referenced, we have disclosures about agricultural lands, we have disclosure for other things. I know it's not required by any ordinance or any state laws, but is it possible that the county council could impose a condition amongst other conditions on a conditional use, and one being that they would be required to have a disclosure?
I believe so, yes.
You know, about the presence of a brownfield or a landfill right. That was on that site. Okay, just a question. Thank you.
I have a question now that you brought that up of our attorney. Evidently, there were no signs on that property that it was a brownfield.
Doesn't have to be, yeah.
Well, we have a sign on our landfills that we closed.
Yeah, this
Angola landfill.
I do know this was a private borrow pit at one point that was illegally dumped on. And so I'm not sure that there was any requirement if the state identified it or putting on. There's no requirement for the county to put that on. Mm. We didn't.
Right. I'm just wondering why the state didn't. They've been testing it for years. So, but there's been no notice. Right. Okay.
I believe I saw someone else in the back. I had their hand up raised.
Sir, come on down, sir, right in the middle. There you go. Yep.
Yes, sir.
Sir, again, if you would state your name for the record and your address, and please sign in too, please.
We ought to sign in. She's at the back. Come in.
And while you're signing in, if I could remind people that do want to speak, if you're stating something that's already been mentioned but someone are covered, it's okay to simply state, and I agree with them on those points, and then make your other points as well.
Okay. Thank you, sir.
Sure.
Mr. Thank President, you. Council members, my name is William Daisy. I'm Assistant Chief of the Nanticoke Indian Association. I live in Dover. I was born and raised in Sussex County. And I still own property in Sussex County. And many of my ancestors are buried in both cemeteries that were mentioned previously. I agree with most of the comments that have been made, and I will see if I can focus basically on the cemeteries. Mm-hmm. The Nanticoke Indian Association is in total agreement regarding concern for these cemeteries, that they be protected. And we don't always agree, but they're in agreement with this particular issue.
We don't either.
These cemeteries are adjacent to the proposed development. And those cemeteries are Corsi Daisy, Norwood Jackson Cemetery, and the Israel Church Cemetery. We've received three memos, or council received three memos regarding these cemeteries. And the developers should have been aware of this, and they should have contacted the State Historic Preservation Office. The last thing we need is to have some developer go in that area and start digging with a backhoe or whatever, and when they discover graves, say, oh, we got to stop because the law mandates that we do this. They should be working with State Historic Preservation Office to make sure this is done properly. There's a high probability that these graves, unmarked graves, exist beyond the current defined boundaries of the cemeteries. At that point in time, they were not very careful regarding boundary lines. We know that graves exist within the current defined boundaries. We do not know how many exist beyond those boundaries. There is a 40-foot requirement on three sides of the Corsi Daisy Jackson Norwood Cemetery. That is required, was required by council and planning. On the side where development is supposed to be, where the proposed development is supposed to exist, there is no boundary there. Now, we were not really overly concerned regarding that prior to this because Mr. Jackson was aware of that possibility, and he is a Native American, and he made a conscious effort to avoid intruding on any unmarked graves. So there wasn't any concern at that point in time. But there is a concern now. And we want to make sure that the law is followed in this respect, to make sure those graves are protected. Now, Cassandra Marshall Corsi is my cousin, and she was ill and couldn't be here tonight. She did ask me just to read a portion of the letter she sent me, so I would like to do that. It's not overly lengthy. She said, I'm concerned about the residential density of proposed arbors at Cottagedale Project. 216 units means there would be many children as residents. Of course, the Daisy Preserved Indian Gravesite is on the property line in Eagle Point. That's sacred ground for us. Therefore, I'm requesting that the developer of the arbors of Cottagedale be required to erect a 6-foot fence on a 40-foot setback line from the gravesite. That's the current gravesite. Again, indicated that. That 40-foot setback is on three sides already. It needs to be the same thing on the fourth side. Also, request a metal sign needs to be attached to the 6-foot fence which says keep out of gravesite. Because this additional barrier is necessary to protect this, preserve the gravesite. She's also requesting that the copy of our preservation covenant be attached to the legal papers of Arbor at Cottondale. And we do have a covenant that will explain that. When I spoke at the planning committee meeting, I indicated that we had a concern regarding there was no mention on the plan of the gravesite. And there really wasn't. And I looked at those plans 2 weeks prior to that meeting. But at that meeting, the chairman indicated that there was mention of the grave sites on the plan, and he asked the developer to show him where those grave sites were. So sometime during that 2-week period, someone became aware of the fact that they were missing and had a concern about it, and they were on there. Now, I have the original plans if anyone wants to see it, and they're not on these plans. And I looked it into our file. And that concerned us because it appeared as though the developer was trying to hide the fact that they were in that area near the development, and they simply didn't want to be bothered with it, you know, out of sight, out of mind. And because in the past, developers, and I'm not accusing them of being unscrupulous, but in the past, grave sites have been destroyed and desecrated, you know, depending on what was going on. And we certainly, there are laws to protect the grave sites now. We want to make sure that those laws are enforced, and we appreciate your efforts in doing this. And thanks for allowing me.
Thank you.
Mr. Daisy.
Thank you.
Go ahead, Mr. Wilson.
I was going to ask you a question. Sure. Has there been any recent burials there in the last?
No. In Israel Cemetery, yes, but not in the course of Daisy gravesite. There have been no burials there since 1930, I believe.
1930. How old you say the first one is? Over 100 years old?
It was in the early 1800s.
So they're not. So a lot of them died in vaults anyway.
Pardon?
I said a lot of them are probably not in vaults.
Oh, no, they're definitely not in vaults. So, you know, at that point in time, they never utilized vaults. Mm-hmm. They're the dirty wooden coffins that you see.
Wooden coffins and cedar,
facing the east. And, you know, and this is, again, we're talking about the course of Daisy Norwood Jackson site. Now, in Israel, again, there have been recent burials.
Mm-hmm.
But it's no question, it's on historic record, and they checked it, and the Historic Preservation Office was involved in that, and they need to be involved in this project to make sure it's done right.
Mr. Daisy, personal question. Are you from a big family, brothers and sisters?
Large family? Yes, I am.
How many brothers and sisters have you got?
There are 26 of us.
No.
Did you have that inside information?
I thought I met you about 10 years ago. Can you elaborate just a little bit?
Dad was married twice, and Mom had three sets of twins, one set of triplets. Mm-hmm. So that the rest of us are singles. You know?
We had six, and I thought I had it bad.
Yeah, I had six. My wife and I originally wanted four, then we had twins, and that fouled that up. You know?
Uh-huh. Thank you, Mr. Daisy.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else wishing to speak in opposition, sir?
Good evening, Council. I actually have some written comments that will help me stay on point. Do I provide them to you or...
Please, or either one, give them to Mr. Lang.
Thank you.
Good evening. My name is Russell Huxtable, and I live at 17345 Graceland Drive, approximately about 1 mile away from the proposed project. I'm a strong affordable housing advocate, and first want to thank the county for enacting its rental program ordinance. I believe the current ordinance, along with its enabling procedures, needs some revisions immediately. And during the three-year phase implementation period. However, considering there is a project before us, let me voice my discord. The county granted preliminary approval to the Arbors of Cottagedale project to enter into the Sussex County rental program contingent upon two things, obtaining zoning approval and signing a Sussex County rental program agreement. Now, apparently, they do have an agreement that is signed, but by that action, staff is approving and endorsing the zoning and density plan without the council approval and without the public process. This means that once the applicant gets the zoning approval and signs their agreement, they can enter the program and receive the benefits enumerated in the program, namely density bonus and expedited review. In accordance with these prerequisites and procedures, this project is currently not approved because the applicant does not have their zoning approval nor their signed agreement until yesterday. Yet they're receiving the benefits of the Sussex County rental program right now because their change in zoning and conditional use applications show up within 1 month after your preliminary approval in the Sussex County rental program for a hearing before the Planning and Zoning Commission, and now scheduled for a hearing before you tonight within 2 months from the time you granted preliminary approval. That is no coincidence. If the applicant wishes an expedited review and the benefits at the moment they submit an application with the county into the rental program, the zoning would be based upon the AR1 designation it currently has. They would get expedited review on that conditional use application and would have to meet the criteria of Ordinance 1920, allowing for an increase in density for multifamily dwelling structures in an AR1 district. Furthermore, if they choose this designation, they would have to meet the criteria of 1920 as well, which would have the developer proffer a fee for every unit in excess of 2 units to the acre. The calculations currently are 18.33 acres times the 4 acres allowed, or times the 4 units allowed, which would be 73.32. Now, we take the 73.32, multiply that by the 20% bonus density, and you get to a number of 87.98. The fee should be based upon the first number and not the density bonus. If the applicant instead wants to have MR zoning, then they need to go through the proper procedure for changing of zones and not get expedited treatment of their zoning change application. Our government is founded upon the preservation and protection of many rights, and this application goes to the heart of our communal property rights. In this democracy, we have a public process with public input run by publicly elected officials deciding amongst zoning laws enacted by the public body, and that is with whom this decision will be made. The county, in this case, circumvented the process by granting preliminary approval to a project before the proper process had a chance to run its course by allowing a project to unjustly benefit from an ordinance it does not comply with yet. We should not be here tonight. This is self-evident from the fact that many issues to be considered in assessing the Arbors of Cottagedale are coming out of order. There are procedures in place, and they are not being followed. The process in this instance is muddied at best. Even the existing ordinances that allow for expedited review only allow it after zoning has been obtained, and these expedited reviews typically refer only to conditional use zoning applications, staff review, and preliminary approval. They do not cover a change in zoning applications. It is unwise to circumvent this process. I hope this application will be rejected at this time because it is originated with an untimely action and has continued to follow an improper sequence of events. I hope the rental program will undergo a few tweaks and adjustments before it is used again. Furthermore, the proposed project density does not fit within the neighborhood. While this is a single project located within certain meets and bounds, it can only be assessed with regard to the greater neighborhood in which it lies and the characteristics already established by recent approvals within that area. I believe adjacent properties are zoned AR1 with conditional use, and that is the neighborhood characteristic. If this project were reintroduced with an AR1 zoning with conditional use and bonus density of 20% for a project of 88 units, allowing for an overall better design with the affordable housing units, then I would support it, as I would hope the rest of the public would also support it and be less offended. Affordable rental housing is a much-needed and vital component to our community, as is proper planning procedures and care for our existing neighborhood characteristics. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else like to speak? Sir?
My name is James Curtis. I am a resident of Eagle Point and a retired history professor from the University of Delaware. Lived in Eagle Point for almost 2 years now. It has recently come to the attention of my household and that of many others that the Nanticoke Burial Ground, which is a marked site on Eagle Point property, very likely extends into the proposed site for the arbors at Cottagedale development. In fact, as in 2004, there were several memos sent out from state historic preservation people indicating the likely presence of these burial sites. I taught history at the university for 33 years, and during that time directed a number of undergraduate and graduate research projects on the Nanticoke tribe. As a result of this experience, I can testify to the inestimable value of the Nanticoke heritage to the people of Delaware, and especially to the active Nanticoke communities here in Sussex County. I agree with earlier presenters that it would be a shame if anything that contributes to our knowledge of this vibrant culture should be lost to the blade of a developer's bulldozer. Surely there must be some kind of accurate procedure that the developer could follow that would determine whether or not there were unmarked graves. I know there are commissions and archaeological associations that can be contracted to perform this kind of research and the test sites that are necessary to develop an answer to this. I would point out to the council, while we're not in New York City had a major African-American burial ground develop under a large skyscraper that they were building, and they had to halt the entire process in order to do the necessary research. It got the community involved, and it really became a very great teaching moment for the people in the area. And this is the kind of thing that I would hope that whatever we discover, if construction begins, that first of all the testing be done by people who are sensitive to the archaeological process involved in this, and that then if this development does continue, that there is a very important procedure whereby the relics that are recovered are properly cared for. So again, I agree entirely with things that have been said before. In answer to a question, do I want this site cleaned up? The answer is certainly yes. Would I be in favor of an 80-unit development in the area that was originally proposed? The answer to that is yes, because I think this would provide much more comfort in the development, in the finding out about the burial ground property, and much more leeway to be able to honor this great tradition. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else who'd like to speak? Yes, ma'am.